It is July 19th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 651 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I missed my friend Allison in Miami, where we were both. I was in the stands at the All-Star game, and she was actually at there for the experience. And we are now no longer in Florida, which means we can move on with our lives. Allison, how's it going?
We are no longer in Florida. Well, what more do you need to say? That pretty much sums up my day.
I'm going to do a plug before we get going. MLB does this Twitter show that I scared the bejesus out of a friend of mine the other day, by the way, because she was just on Twitter and all of a sudden just started hearing my voice. I thought you could control the audio on those things, but it freaked her out. But we do this MLB show. I'm a guest on it once a week. But Allison, you go out to New York for it, and I have to say the show is really good. It's a lot of the great people that we have going on over there. But I think you're particularly great. I just want to know if you listen to this podcast, like, hey, I like Allison. Can I get more Allison? The MLB Twitter show is a terrific way to get more Allison Fritter. I really enjoy you on that show. So nice work.
Well, thank you very much, Will. Yeah, it's fun. I think this will be our fourth one tomorrow. And I really enjoy it because part of one of the privileges that I have in the job that I have is that I have to read a lot of baseball coverage every day. When I say have to, I mean, I guess you get to do that. But that is a big part of just, you know, anything that you do, like there's prep work that goes ahead of what you're doing. And so it's thoroughly enjoyable to kind of scour through and go, I mean, you do this all the time, just to go through what's going on with the teams and sort of talking points and interesting things going on. And I think this has just been a fascinating season. So that helps a lot too. But I have a good time kind of arguing points. I'm very opinionated about a lot of things, especially when it comes to baseball. And so I do feel like we have a lot of different people on there that pipe in with their opinions, and that gets to be really fun. You know, I think that the only drawback is the fact that we don't all get to say as much as we absolutely want to, because we have to give time to everybody else. But we have a good time. And Brittany Giroli and I are mainly in the Twitter dugout together, and we yuck it up. And then we have people like you on, and Danny Graves, and it's fun. So I hope people watch it. It's like one of those things where the first day when they were preparing us for this, they said, it's casual, not pretend. You are talking to Twitter people on Twitter. So don't make it formal. Dress informally and just talk as if you're talking to people on Twitter. So, and that's what I think I do best. So it's really fun.
Yeah, I enjoy the show. I recommend whenever you're listening to this show, it's every Wednesday night. I highly recommend you check it out. And you get to, and I don't know what time I'm popping up on Wednesday, but I have casual glasses now. I'm getting older. I've got some casual glasses now. They make me look professorial, except with my haircut, I look like a slightly younger Joe Scarborough, which I don't know if it's something I should be going for all the time.
You're much more handsome than Joe Scarborough. So they're scholarly glasses. They're not like cool guy glasses like Joe Madden. They're scholarly glasses.
I think of all glasses are scholarly. I never had glasses when I was a kid and I really wanted them. So I always thought all the smart kids had glasses. So now that I have some, I guess I just assume they're all scholarly. Joe Madden's looks scholarly to me, but I guess they're just kind of hipster glasses. So I don't know. I guess all glasses look smart to me. That's really what we've taken care of, is I have a very fundamentally silly third grade attitude as to what makes a person look smart. And it's just glasses.
Yeah, no, the cool glasses are not, they don't make, I don't think that they make anybody look smart.
Okay, well.
They make them look like they're cool guys. That's
it. I look like a young, I got Joe Scarborough glasses. I don't know if those are cool glasses or not. But man, I can't rock out on a riff like Joe Scarborough. Okay, we're going to move on. So I think there are a couple things I want to get to this week. The All-Star game was too long ago and nobody cares anymore. So I think the main three things that are going on, the first big thing, I don't want to get the trade deadline too much because it's still a week away and we got plenty of time to talk about that. I want to talk about the Dodgers. The Dodgers have been a team that we have kind of debated a little bit in this podcast. I was up on them for a little bit and you were down on them. Now they've clearly come around the other way. They look like a historic team right now. They are on a better pace than the Cubs were last year, a team that we thought the Cubs were this amazing team. They've passed the Astros. They have won 9 in a row. They've got a 10.5 game lead on Arizona. They look unstoppable right now.
Yes, they do. And you wonder if I don't know. I mean, it's not like the team has really changed that much. They're of course getting extremely good performances from, you know, like the Alex Woods of the world, in addition to obviously having like Cody Bellinger coming out of nowhere. I mean, it really started when Cody Bellinger got called up around the third week in April. And so you just wonder like, oh, and Yasiel Puig, by the way, nobody's talking about him, but he's having like this really nice run. So it's sort of like these guys that always had the potential to be this individually, and now they're all just doing it at the same time. And yeah, I mean, they're on a historic pace. I'm just looking at their depth chart right now, and I'm like, well, these are the same guys that we've been talking about for a couple of years now, with obvious additions, like Seager and Bellinger the last couple of years. But they, yeah, they're, I mean, they've always been so deep. They have so much depth at every position. They can really mask over any like deficiencies very quickly. And this is a ridiculous team. And it just, you know, they haven't won a World Series, and now going on, 18 years? No, is it 18 or 28?
It's been 28. Yes, yeah, almost 30 years.
28. My God, the 80s were 30 years ago.
I know, it's terrible.
So yeah, you sort of assume that they are, that they're due. And so it would be kind of cool to have the Astros and the Dodgers playing the World Series, which I don't think is going to happen because it never works out that well.
Yeah, the thing that's amazing with the Dodgers, obviously they have a ton of top-tier talent. Justin Turner is betting 374, and he's slumping. I mean, like, it's just ridiculous. And Bellinger comes in, and he's amazing. Puig's coming in. Jock Peterson, like, his batting average is down, but he's having a terrific year. But, like, it's just all these other guys. Like, Chris Taylor is having an awesome year, and Austin Barnes is having an awesome year, and Alex Wood shows up and has this dominant year, and Pedro Baez is having the best year of his career. Like, that's really the kind of the Dodgers thing, which I think speaks to, you know, we spent a lot of time when Steinbrenner and that crew came over from Tampa. They did not do immediately what everybody thought they were going to do, which was be basically Tampa with just a crap load of money. Like, they still spent money, and this last offseason they actually spent a lot of money, but they did not go in there and immediately just turn in to just buy whatever they wanted. They were cautious, they were careful, they just made little moves on the margins to have that kind of depth. And now you come in, and like, the thing that's great about the Dodgers is if you look at like Washington, who I think is probably the second best team in the National League, if they lose like Bryce Harper, they're done. If they lose Max Scherzer, they are done. And I don't think that about the Dodgers. I mean, obviously, if they lost Clayton Kershaw, that would stink. But they've got guys to fill those spots. Turner would be hard to fill his spot because he's been so good. But they've got guys to play third base. They've got guys everywhere. And it's funny, you know, this is the Dodgers' philosophy for the last few years has been to do this, is to just overwhelm you from everywhere and wait for breakout seasons and have those guys come up. And to me, that's what's so kind of unsolved by the Dodgers. It's that, again, Chris Taylor, I literally have no idea who that guy is. And he's got a 369 OBP with 10 homers. And Austin Barnes, who is a backup catcher anywhere else, has got 5 homers, and he's got a 400 on base percentage. Like, he's got these guys, like Andrew Toles gets hurt, totally doesn't bother them. Frank Ludieta, Scott Van Slyke gets hurt, totally doesn't bother them. Look at the pitchers have all gotten hurt, totally doesn't bother them. They got all these bullpen guys that pop up. It's funny, we spent last year, the whole season, talking about the Cubs and how this felt like, wow, this is a historic team that we're seeing. And this year, along with the Astros, we have two teams that are actually better than they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are on pace for 108. So what are the Dodgers on pace for? Like 113? I mean, it's
112 right now. Yeah, 112, which is crazy. That's crazy. And I think there's an argument to be made as more teams are more comfortable with tanking. We're not calling it tanking. We're calling it being okay with not winning.
No, we're calling it tanking. Call it what it is. Call tanking.
I'm with you. But as more teams do that, it just stands to reason that you're going to have these super teams pop up every once in a while, because there's just, with the bottom of this division, with San Diego not even really trying and San Francisco completely bottoming out, there's just a ton of wins to have in this division, and they're just gobbling them up. And it's funny, like, you wonder when they get into the moment where they're like, okay, let's just dial it back now, make sure Kershaw is healthy, make sure Wood stays healthy. Right now, their third starter, you know, Rich Hill is coming along now. He's starting to be back to Rich Hill again. Maybe it's Brandon McCarthy, who's been really good this year. But, you know, there's always that point that you have with a team when and the Astros are going to run into this too, of your lead is so big, you almost have to just spend half of August and September just making sure nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, it's going to be, what I think is going to be interesting is, you know, when do you kind of scale back off? Because like, neither one of these teams is really going to be in danger, especially the Astros. But I guess, I mean, the Nationals could, I guess, maybe threaten to have the best record in the National League. But really and truly, like, you're pretty much guaranteed to have the best record in your league. But then, so World Series home field advantage is dependent on the best record overall, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now that's a big deal. So now if you have two teams like the Astros and the National, or the Astros and the Dodgers, really needing to not scale back if they're going to be within, you know, a couple games of each other. I just think that's going to be like an interesting thing. Cause like, what do you do? I mean, with such an importance on home field advantage for the World Series, that might factor into it. But at the same time, if the Astros have a 20 game lead in their division or a 15 game lead in their division, I mean, I think we're seeing it already with how slow they're bringing Dallas Keuchel back, because they really just don't need him. And they really need him to pitch deep into October. But yeah, it's going to be about not getting hurt, not getting fatigued, not getting too tired. Guys are going to get time off. And then it's like, how do you keep that sort of energy and drive? And if you're not in a pennant race in September, you know, how do you keep that energy going into October? Because that does play a lot into it. So it's going to be interesting because, see, I don't know. Like, when this whole season is over, we're going to look back on it, and people like way smarter than me and all these Fangraph geeks and all these people that like dive way more into this stuff than me are going to look at it like, why did this happen? Why were there so many crappy teams that were in contention, but like were, you know, right around 500 and just a couple of elite teams? It's just so interesting that there could be so many bad, to me, not bad teams, uninspiring teams, teams that do not excite you one way or another. And then a couple that are just like having found some kind of secret formula, secret potion, whatever, some algorithm that nobody else has that they've just been, you know, off and running. It's, I don't know. I mean, can you ever remember like something like this happening where there's like, you know, three teams that are just amazing and then everyone else is like, meh.
I mean, it does feel like a result of what the Cubs and Astros have done, to be honest. The Cubs in particular, but really, you know, those were two teams that said, we're just not really going to compete for 3 or 4 years, but we're going to build up.
There's got to be more to it than that. It can't just be that.
But that's the thing, because that's why everybody's doing it. Like, that's why, like, the Phillies aren't competing. The Reds aren't competing. The Padres aren't competing. Like, there's just put – the Phillies aren't – like, that puts a lot of wins on the table for these teams. Like, if you look at look at the West. The A's are a team that's – like, even Billy Beane is now openly saying, we can't compete right now. And, you know, you've got – and you then it helps when you have teams that have high expectations that fall short, like Seattle. Like the Mets, like the Giants, like there's wins to be had on the table. But I think one of the reasons this competitive imbalance is here is because it's not so much that the Dodgers and Astros just know better than everyone else, though I think they're two terrific front offices. It's really more that they are now at the peak of their competition cycle. And the Dodgers, because they have so much money, are probably going to be able to stay there. The Astros, you know better than I do. I'm sure they took all that money that they didn't spend during the years where they were not playing well, and they're all going to reinvest it in perpetuity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Exactly. So, like, that's the point is, like, the Astros almost are, like, the Astros are the better examples. To me, the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Yankees and the Red Sox, look at those four teams. Those four teams are really smart. They have top front offices, and they have a ton of money. Like, to me, this was this is the natural result of what was going to happen with the whole Moneyball idea. Once the rich teams figured out how to do what they figured out the formula, they figured out how to be smart in the front office, they could just be good in perpetuity. Houston, because they have a really smart front office, has this little contingent window now, but they're not going to be able to re-sign all of these guys, and they're going to all filter down. Whereas the logical extension of this, which I'm a little afraid to say because I don't. This is the era of baseball that people dislike the most. There are still people to this day that tell me, well, I used to like baseball until just the rich teams won all the time, which has not been true in like 20 years.
Exactly.
Baseball has been like that in 20 years. But now you can make an argument that those four teams, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Cubs, are putting themselves in a position to just be really, really great moving forward. And to me, the nightmare situation is look at like the Phillies. The Phillies did what the Astros did. And they're like, we're just going to stink for a while, but trust us, you're going to start to see a little progress. You start to see a little progress, like what the Brewers are doing this year. Like, you're seeing the little progress. The problem is, what happens if you tank for 3 years, but you don't actually become good? And you exactly. tell your friends not to worry, we're going to be good, and then you never become good. That's the worry part. But the fact is, teams are willing to do that, I would argue, is one of the reasons that you have the Dodgers just stacking up wins, because there's just a lot of wins to be had.
I guess. I mean, I think that there's an argument definitely in favor of that, but I can't imagine that that's driving this whole thing. I mean, I don't know. Are the Reds tanking? Like, I don't. Are the Reds?
They're not tanking. They're not tanking. But winning is not the number one priority for the Reds.
There's a difference. There's really big difference. Yeah. No. There's a huge difference.
I agree.
And trying not to win.
I'm not tanking,
is when you take your payroll down to nothing while you are trying not to win.
Right.
Yeah, that you are going to continue charging major league prices and doubling prices when good teams are in town and acting as a major league team and spending absolute like not putting major league players on the field.
But that sounds like tanking. What the Astros did. That's what the Astros did. But like, that's not what like the Brewers were doing the last couple of years. Like they were clearly stripping their roster.
That's not what the Brewers have done the last couple of years.
So you don't consider
what the Reds have done the last.
So who do you think tanked? Just the Astros?
I guess the Cubs probably tanked. The Phillies, they tanked. I mean, they sacrificed. They just. I don't know. What did the Cubs payroll get down to, though? It wasn't that low, was it?
I mean, I think that may be really what the issue is. I think we just have a different definition of tanking. For me, I honestly don't use the term tanking that much, because I feel like tanking is we are actively like players never tank. Players play the best they can. Like, for me, tanking is like what the NBA does at the end of the year, where they purposely pretend that guys are hurt so they can lose games late in the year and get a better draft pick. I think what baseball is, and I think as close as anyone come is probably with the Astros, because they did do exactly what you're talking about, where they pretended to be a major league team when they weren't a major. They weren't even on TV, for crying out loud. Like, they were pretending to be a major league team. But I do think, fine, we won't call it tanking, but I do think one of the reasons the wins are there to hand is you have teams like Cincinnati, like Philadelphia, like the White Sox, who certainly want to get better and have a strategy for getting better, but one of the factors in that strategy is not winning games in 2017. And because of that, because they're making decisions based on 2019 and 2020, that leaves wins on the table for teams that are trying to win in 2017.
Yeah, and I think that is, again, that's an argument. I don't think that there's enough teams that are doing that to fully explain why there's such a discrepancy.
Probably not fully, but I think it's right.
It's not like the Astros. Like, if you look at the Astros schedule, it's not like you're like, okay, well, that team's tanking. That, I mean, I get it that there's always bad teams every year. I mean, there's always teams that are, you know, basically going into the season knowing they're not going to be contenders and that have their eye on 2 years from then. I mean, that's been going on since the beginning of time, basically, or probably since the beginning of free agency. So I just don't know that explains all of it. Right. It just seems like there's too many teams. I mean, how many teams are in contention right now just for the sole fact that there's 15 crappy teams that want to be in contention now have to, you know, that this wasn't their plan. I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those bizarre seasons to me.
Yeah, definitely the American League wildcard race has a bunch of teams that are actually okay with not winning but are still kind of in the race. So it is. It's kind of confusing. Like, I feel it. Joe Sheehan has this line where he says, "You almost want a team. This is the type of year where you want your team to either win 7 in a row or lose 7 in a row, just so you know." Like, just so you know where you are. Like, I think about this with the Cardinals right now. If the Cardinals won 7 in a row, awesome. We're all in. Let's go. If they lost 7 in a row, oh, I'm angry. But now we're not going to go trade a bunch for Marcelo Ozuna. Like, they know where you stand. That's what's so weird about this month. Because also the baseball season is where it's really hot. It's after the All-Star break and it's kind of dragging a little bit. But this really is such a pivotal part of the year coming up to the trade deadline. Because you, this is when you have to decide, am I going for it or am I not? That's why it would be somewhat easier. You, if the Royals just lost seven in a row, everyone could just move it. Like, yeah, it probably might be the best thing to happen for the Royals if they were to lose seven in a row. They wouldn't be under the illusion that they're trying to win this year. They could trade away all these guys, these free agents. They wouldn't have to do a last goodbye for everybody, all these free agents. They could make their team better down the line. But if they go like 4-3 in those games, they're still kind of hanging around, and that may be the worst thing for them. So, but this is good. This is really interesting.
No, first of all, the Royals are not built. They're not going to rebuild their organization by trading away guys who are going to be free agents.
Yeah, but they're going to get more than if they just leave. That's not how you do it. Yeah, but they're going to get more than if they just leave.
Right, but that's not the conundrum. Dayton Moore is not sitting there thinking, do I let these guys continue playing the season together and try to put something together, or do I get this fabulous farm system back within the course of 3.5 months and then just be set for the next 5 years? Because that's not how it works. And no, he knows.
But it's a start.
It's a tiny start. It's way, 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 in my opinion, overblown what you can get to help you 2 years down the road from guys that you get that are rentals. I'm not talking about guys that have a year and 2 months. I'm talking about guys that have 2 months left on their contracts that are going to be free agents. It's a myth that is how you restock your system, that's how it doesn't work that way. You get a couple, you know, you might get a couple of pieces that might be marginally helpful. I mean, in all those players that the Astros traded, I think we talked about this before, in 2012, when they dumped every single guy that had any kind of major league service time, Chris Devinsky is the only one that has emerged from that as, you know, a legitimate contributor, very valuable guy. And all those guys, they came and went, and there's been some that have had, you know, decent showing, but they're not impact players. The ones that are impact players are the ones where you trade a guy that's got 2 years of arbitration eligibility left, you've got him under control till after 2019. That's when you get back the true value. Dayton Moore knows exactly what he has, which is why he's keeping these guys together, which is fine.
Well,
good for him.
Once again, the Yankees screwing everything up for everyone, because I think, if anything, the Chapman trade last year, and of course, Torres hasn't really done anything yet and he's been hurt, but I think what they got for Chapman, again, also Chapman is a guy that throws 150 million miles an hour, but...
He's an exception. Yeah. The exception, absolutely. Exception. They got a ton for him. He's the exception. Yes, yeah, absolutely. So. Randy Johnson, you know, those kind of guys. But I'm just talking about the next tier of guys that have had really good careers, that are coming into free agency, that are, you know, still largely effective, but not like, not a Chapman type. Yeah, that's definitely a caveat there.
Okay, so one other thing I want to get to before we wrap up on one thing on Port Baltimore. The MLB Network had a thing today talking about the possibility of, clearly, it's a little early for award season, but this is around this is around the time where those discussions really kind of kick into gear. At this point, it's obviously barring an injury. I think it's possible Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger could both get hurt right now and miss the rest of the season and still win Rookie of the Year awards. I think that's a fair, I think it's very, particularly Judge. But another interesting concept of this is, could each of them win the MVP? Right now, I think it's hard to argue that Judge is not the favorite. And I know he's gotten off to a slow start after the All-Star break. I'm sure it's because of the Home Run Derby. That totally is logical. It's not. Anyway, Mike Petriello's talked about this as well. But Aaron Judge is probably at this point the leader in the American League MVP awards. And I think Bellinger's a little early for him. I think Goldschmidt's probably the leader now, and Harper's around there, and Arenado. But certainly if Bellinger plays like he has been, he's got a chance in the MVP as well. I'm curious, do you like the idea of either one of them being an MVP favorite at the end of the year? Do you consider them the favorites now?
I do consider them the favorites now. And I think that there are a lot of other players who, like you said, would merit consideration that, I mean, we're far from the finish line there. If Aaron Judge continues on doing what he did in the first half, regardless of where the Yankees end up, I mean, you have to think, I mean, if you know, he's on pace to hit like 60 home runs. So yeah, absolutely. And if you're then if, On the flip side, if you're looking at the impact that a player has on his team, then there's nobody that can beat out Cody Bellinger on the other side, because they took off basically when he came up. And that's not the only reason why they're doing what they're doing, but it sure is. It just seems a little coincidental that things started coming together right at the same time as him coming up. So there's a lot of other candidates that I think will merit consideration. The fact that Mike Trout was out for 6 weeks definitely helps Judge's candidacy, and then we'll see with the curmudgeon-y baseball writers if they decide to go with the best overall performance or if they're going to go with who impacted their team the most. And that will depend on how the standings end up. And so it gets really messy at the end of there. So you know, if the Yankees aren't, you know, if they're not in contention for any of the wild cards or anything in the division, does Aaron Judge still have the edge? Then there's Jose Altuve, who seems to not win it largely because he doesn't hit as many home runs as the other guys. I don't know. It's a fascinating thing, but to have both rookies of the year win MVPs would be insane. Yeah, I think that we can agree on that.
That would be wild. My fun scenario on this, Jeff Sullivan wrote a great piece for Fangraphs about this a while back, about he wasn't talking about MVP voting. He's actually voting about who's going to be the leader in WAR. Who is Aaron Judge? Aaron Judge is the leader in WAR right now. But Mike Trout has missed 2 months, like how much? A month and a half? It'll be a month and a half, almost 2 months of the season. He's back now. How is there a scenario? Forget Sullivan's WAR idea. Is there a scenario where Trout somehow comes back and wins this award? Like in a theoretical notion, let's say Judge continues to struggle and the Yankees fall out like you talked about, and somehow the Angels, against all probabilities, still hang around the wild card race and maybe even sneak one out with Trout being an amazing player. Do you think Trout would have a chance then, or do you think they'd just land on one of the Astros?
No, I think that if the Angels were to win a playoff spot, if they were to clinch a playoff spot, a wild card, with Trout hitting like 350 in the last 2 months of the season, and, you know, I think it would actually take the Angels actually getting a playoff.
You think so? Yeah, I can see that.
Not actually, like, assuming that Altuve and Correa can continue on what they're doing and the Judge continues to have a good year and breaks out of this little slump that he's in. And of course, it can't be because of the home run derby, because there's nothing tangible that you can actually put on paper to discuss it. So there's a certain segment of our politically driven people that can't even have the conversation except to say that it's not remotely possible, because you can't come up with some kind of formula that nobody else.
Well, it's just the formula is, it's just that it hasn't happened. I mean, they're not like making up numbers for it. They're just saying that, like, when Mike Petriello writes that the home run derby does not affect swings, he's not just saying because of math. He's just saying that, like, it hasn't actually affected players in the past.
How do you know that?
Because they haven't performed as they performed just as well after the home run derby as they did before. Which
that's not true. There have been players that haven't, though.
But there's just not like a lot of empirical proof of that. Like, it feels that way because
there have been several players that have come out of the All-Star break after the home run derby and have not hit for a month. Is that not enough? But that doesn't count?
I mean, I'll just direct you to Petriello's article on this, because I mean, I don't think Mike is like purposely like doing math, playing math games. I think that like sure, there's always going to be one or two players who struggle after they do the home run derby, but like saying it's because of the home run derby, I think that's as much of a guess as anything.
It is a guess. It's absolutely a guess. That's the whole thing. It's a guess if he doesn't, if it has nothing to do with the home run derby. It's a guess if it does have something to do with the home run derby. That's my only argument.
That's fair.
He's guessing too. Like, he's guessing, I'm guessing, you're guessing. We're all guessing. That's all I'm saying.
Guessing. I have empirical certainty about everything moving forward. okay, the last thing actually cuts back to something you wanted to talk about. You mentioned earlier that I think is a really key point, and that's involving the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles, I wrote about the Orioles on Monday. They've kind of had this last 5 years. The difference between how people look at statistics and how people look at things that happen on the field. The Orioles have been at the centerpiece of that debate really for 5 years now. They've been the team that has overperformed what the statistical analysts have said they were going to. The Royals, I think, have also been like that. But this year it's kind of all come falling down on them. The rotation is a disaster. And a lot of the guys that they thought were going to hit, Trumbo, Davis, and particularly the guy I want to talk about next, Manny Machado, are really struggling. So you mentioned earlier, and I think I tend to be more on your side on this, so I think there's maybe some variance there. But if someone's going to trade, get actual legitimate value for one of these guys at the deadline, they need to trade them when they've got more than a year of the control.
Correct.
To me, I look at the Baltimore Orioles and I see a team that their win, like whatever your thoughts, like even if you think that analysts were not giving them enough credit, and I think it's difficult to argue they weren't. They've won the most games in the AL for the last 5 years coming into this season. So clearly they've been underappreciated, even if they didn't win a World Series. But They're clearly getting older. The pitching is not getting any better. They don't have a good farm system. They've got a lot of money tied up in Chris Davis and Mark Trumbo, which seems a very bad idea moving forward. If there is a team that it looks to me not going to contend in 2018, if just because Boston and the Yankees are going to be so good, never minding Tampa Bay, whatever Tampa Bay and Toronto do. If I look at Baltimore and I say, you guys are probably not going to be good in 2018. You have no farm system. You're in deep trouble. Manny Machado is a free agent after the 2018 season. He's right. going to want an insane amount of money. And I don't mean, like, it's one, like, clearly the Orioles showed they'll pay a little. They paid Davis a lot of money and they paid Trumbo a lot of money. But Machado, even though he's had kind of a down year this year, he's going to get, like, he's not going to get Harper money. But he's going to get big money. Like he's going to get big money down the line. You can make an argument he might get kind of what Trout's contract was, which for the record underpays Trout, but it's still a massive amount of money. And if he gets that kind of money, I can see the Orioles maybe approaching that, but someone will outpay them. So here's my question. Why don't the Orioles trade Manny Machado right now?
That's what they should be doing. And that's when you really have to do a lot of soul searching and you really have to sit down and be realistic and not a rah-rah saying, you know, so you have something positive to say to the owner. I mean, you have to look at things realistically. You have to look at your farm system, which you say is not good. And you have to say, are we going to be competitive in the next couple of years? Are we going to be able to be competitive during if we do sign Manny Machado to a long-term contract, will we realistically be able to pay him what he's going to be commanding? This is like the Hunter Pence situation. And the Astros traded him and he had a couple of years of arbitration eligibility left and they needed to get a haul. And you have to, it emptied out the stadium. When I tell you the day after the trade deadline, there were 5,000 fewer people in that stadium. Yeah. There were only 18,000 people to start off with. It was such a dire impact and it hurt the franchise. It angered the fan base. And that's there's no like happy solution to this whole thing, but the Orioles are in a situation where they don't have the guys that they're going to be able to bring up through the system. And so where are they going to be as a franchise in 2 years? And if it's that they're going to be really crappy, yes, you trade Manny Machado.
But of course, you know, Tim Marchman of Deadspin has written a lot about this because of the White Sox, the team that he cheers for. On one hand, a fan, it's really frustrating as a fan to keep saying, oh, we have these really good players now. But trust us, these guys that you don't know, they're going to turn out well. When prospects bust out all that, blow up all the time. Like, yep. A lot of prospects don't work out, you know. And for me, it's got to be frustrating because Machado feels like the next version. I think maybe I don't know if a better player, but certainly more valuable at the time he's going to free agency, version of what Mike Mussina happened with them. Like, Mike Mussina broke a lot of Orioles fans' heart. Not so much him personally, but when he went to the Yankees, that was not only a, oh, we lost him to our rival. It was, we can't keep this guy. Like, we are the team that doesn't keep guys. And that's a crushing thing to have to deal. Because if the Orioles, this, like, the sad thing is, these last 5 years where the Orioles have been kind of, like, they've had some good seasons and they made the ALCS. This is as good as it's been for the Orioles in 20 years. Like, this is their window. This is their peak. Now, the Royals got a championship out of theirs, and the Phillies get a championship out of theirs, and the Orioles didn't. The Orioles really never even came all that close. They never made it to a World Series. They never won a game in the League Championship Series. But if you trade Machado, which I agree with you, it feels like they have to do it, and they have to swallow hard and make that really difficult decision. If you do that, I mean, you're basically saying, don't come out to the ballpark for like 5 years. And And if these young players if we do get young players back, if you get really excited about them, don't get too attached to them because we're not going to sign them either. And that is a very tough place for a franchise to be in.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's not that they can't keep players. It's that they are making mistakes in other areas of building a winning franchise, and whether it's like completely their fault or not, I don't know. They've never been like really strong, like pitching wise. I mean, they've made some bad trades. I mean, there's been other things that go on. And so then when it comes up, it's not that, oh, we can't keep them. It doesn't make any sense to keep him. And the question is, they have to sit down and look at each other and say, are we going to be good in the next 5 years? And if the answer is no, and if you're saying like what Peter Angelos wants to hear, then you can convince yourself of anything. Yeah, if Dan Duquette is really having an honest moment with Buck Showalter and Brady Anderson and everybody else who's making decisions, they know. I mean, they know. They know what they have in the farm system. Like, they understand. And it's just a matter of if ownership will back them on whatever decision they make. They know what the right decision is. They do. Sign Manny Machado to a $150 million contract and just never win the entire life of it. I mean, ask the Reds how that Joey Votto thing is working out. It's a very tough pill to swallow because it literally will kill your fan base instantly. People will stop coming, and then you don't have any money to do anything. It's tough, man. It's a hard situation to be in.
It's a tough decision. And this is why we just sit here and talk about these things rather than actually have to make the decisions, because that seems hard. Allison, as always, I've had a blast chatting with you on this stuff. I always make sure to follow Allison at Allison Footer, AllysonFootter, and watch Allison kick some major arse on the MLB Twitter show. It has been a delight for me to watch that show and to watch Allison be great and then pop up as I pop up occasionally with my stylish glasses. So Allison, thank you for coming on and chatting with me.
I can't wait to see your cool guy. Your stylish glasses there, Will.
They're both cool guy, stylish, and intelligent. Anything that distracts from the rest of the face is really the goal. All right, Allison, have a great week. I'm sure we'll talk next week. Be safe.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.